It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Madison Allworth.
I'm Juan Williams.
I'm Liz Claman, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, April 5th, 2024. And Lisa Brady. The sun and the moon are about to put on a show, and Americans are traveling near and far for a front row seat.
I can't think of anyone right now who has not jumped on the eclipse bandwagon and really they're feeling the excitement.
I'm Chris Foster. Biden campaign says don't worry about it, but polls show former President Trump ahead of him and most of the states expected to be close in November.
Those are the states. Those are the stakes where this battle is going to be determined, where the outcome of the election is going to be decided. And it's not a secret. It's not rocket science. There's 5 to 7 states that are going to determine this thing.
And I'm Tommy Lahren. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
A solar eclipse can be big business, especially along the path of totality, parts of the U.S. where the moon will completely cover the sun on Monday.
We receive in 10, 15 calls a day that I got to turn down.
Gregorio Strayhorn, general manager for the Townhouse Inn outside Cape Girardeau, Missouri, says people started booking there a year ago for this.
Then they said they wanted for April the 7th for the eclipse. In 2024, and we was amazed.
And because rooms are now hard to come by and expensive, some travelers are getting creative, like the one renting space in Michelle Mangrum's backyard.
He said he'd give us $75 to pitch a tent. He wasn't going to pay the crazy hotel prices.
For states getting eclipse visitors, one University of Texas professor has calculated there could be a combined economic boost of $1.5 billion.
Well, we are expecting a huge influx of tourism.
Bob Duffy is president and CEO of the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce in New York State.
Our hotel rates are up like 1,200% right now for a 4-day period leading up to Monday the 8th, which is highly unusual for this area. So hotels, restaurants, museums, businesses. Rochester is getting into the mood. There's a huge sense of the eclipse coming. I think there's a great sense of excitement. People are into it. We have breweries creating eclipse of beer. We have from concerts with our Philharmonic Orchestra to just a host of events. I think people are really catching the eclipse fever, so to speak, and they're expecting probably between 300,000 and 500,000 people coming here, at least the day or two before through the 8th. We did host the PGA Championship last year, our Oak Hill Country Club. And there's a sense that the visitor numbers may even exceed what we saw with the PGA Championship last year.
Wow. That was one of my questions, is kind of like what could, you know, these kinds of numbers compare to? I mean, the PGA Championship's kind of that's a big deal. So this is.
That was longer. Actually, that lasted the whole week for the PGA. And they've been here many times in the past. But this is probably a 2 or 3 day excursion. People are coming in early. The hotel numbers are really kind of out of sight right now. We tried to look at what Greenville, South Carolina did. And I think they had about $12 million boost. We're thinking between $10 and $20 million in terms of economic vitality. But it's exciting. It really is. And if you know Rochester very well, you know that sometimes the sun is not out every day. So we are hoping for clear blue skies on the 8th. There's been major planning for traffic with our local and state authorities. Our governor's gotten into the act, our mayor and county executive. I have a book from our county executive. There's a whole pamphlet and book in terms of all the activities going on throughout this coming weekend and the eclipse day. And we're not sure if it's going to meet or exceed all the expectations so far, but I think it's exciting. And really, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience for people to really see a full eclipse.
What if there is cloudy weather, for instance, and, you know, the crowds don't materialize to the same extent? Was all of the preparation worth it in that case? Because it sounds like when you're talking about, you know, traffic planning and a pamphlet that was actually made, I mean, these kinds of things add up. There's some money that's been invested in this by the city, too, right?
Oh, the city and the county, the state, everybody's invested. Well, I've learned one thing, having grown up and lived here my whole life, or most of my life, never predict the weather in upstate New York. So you can't predict that. But I have this sense that there's a certain sense of luck with this community that come Monday the 8th, I'm sensing there's going to be a pretty clear sky. So I think we can look ahead and hopefully we'll anticipate great weather and a great day. And one of the things that we all worry about is the traffic. We have 40 employees in our organization. We're actually closing our office on Monday the 8th. Most schools are closed. Most businesses are closed. Not for any fear of things, just for the concern of traffic and not wanting their employees to be caught up morning, midday, or later on in huge jams. So a lot of that planning has gone into play, but it's going to be an experience no matter what the weather is like. And I do believe all the planning that went into it will not be for naught. I think it's for really a great thing. And it's kind of pumped up the excitement. I think, like anything, when the PGA was here, it was huge. It was our Super Bowl last year in May. And I did not think the eclipse would, quote unquote, eclipse those tourism numbers from last year. But I may be proven wrong.
What kind of reaction have residents and businesses had to this idea of so many people coming in for this? Have you heard any people that are dreading it a little bit, or it's really all just been positive?
Well, you know, my sense, all positive. Now, clearly, the restaurants and hotels are loving it. As I mentioned, 12 of the hotel rates are up 1,200% right now, which is really for a week in early April, unusual, not so unusual in later spring, summer, and fall, but this time of year it is. Our restaurants, everybody has eclipse specials. I mentioned, you know, we are a region that has huge amounts of craft breweries, wineries. So we're a foodie city and region. So many things going on. They're all being a part of it. I think there are special eclipse menu items. There are special eclipse themed beers. I believe there's at least one wine with the eclipse theme. So it's kind of like just a fun party atmosphere, which is evolving right now. And it's going to be great. It really is. And I do think it will materialize. People, when they make these hotel reservations, looking at some of the prices that are being charged right now, I won't call it gouging, but I would call it pretty high.
Can you give me an example of a hotel price, like one night?
I don't have it in front of me, but I've heard they're pretty high. And right now, you probably could not find a hotel room in a Rochester region. Or if you could, very few. I can't speak for Airbnb. That may have opened up some other possibilities, but the hotels have been pretty robust. Reservations at restaurants also have been pretty robust. So there is a lot of excitement. And so I think the economic impact is going to be pretty high no matter what. And I think the social impact and the fun is going to be even higher.
Is part of the goal here the hope for a longer term benefit as well? Maybe people who haven't been in the area coming for the eclipse and then wanting to come back?
Well, I would say a quote from a former Kodak CEO I've never forgotten when I was a former mayor, when I was mayor in the city of Rochester was at that time, Kodak and Rochester was the hardest place to get people to come to for their top tier talent and the hardest place to get them to leave once they were here. And that defines Rochester. One of my board members said once, we are a bad cover, but a great book. So when people come here and get to experience this area, I'm a lifelong resident, born and raised here, worked with the state for 4 years, came back and want to stay here. Just, I love the area. I love the region. It offers so much. And we have a beautiful four seasons, so much going on right here. And I think the one thing that people hope we don't see are, you know, excessive crowds. I think people like getting around and driving pretty much with low levels of traffic most of the time. But I can't think of anyone right now who has not jumped on the eclipse bandwagon and really they're feeling the excitement.
It hasn't been that long since the last total eclipse in the U.S. And worldwide, they're a lot less rare.
Across the entire globe, an eclipse happens every 2 to 4 years. So it's something like the Olympics.
Paul M. Sutter is an astrophysicist, research professor, author, and NASA advisor.
But in any one location, any like state or city, it's usually decades, sometimes even centuries between eclipses. And so the fact that there was one in 2017, just 7 years ago, and then one here again in 2024 is actually just a very lucky and beautiful coincidence.
Wow. Now, just to break down the science a little bit, this is the moon passing over the sun, right? Do I have that right?
That's exactly right. So what is happening is the moon orbits the Earth orbits the sun, and every once in a while, the orbit of the moon just carries it in front of the sun, and it casts the shadow on the Earth. And so that is what we are seeing when you are in an eclipse. We are standing in the shadow of the moon, and it's by pure cosmic coincidence. There's no reason for this whatsoever that the sun is so much bigger than the moon, but the moon is so much closer than the sun. And on our sky, they have almost the exact same size. That's just pure chance, pure luck.
Wow. Is the path of totality different every time there's an eclipse?
Oh, absolutely. Every single time. The moon's orbit is very wobbly. And so just how it's wobbling, where it's going on its path, that determines where its shadow will be cast on the ground. So in 2017, that eclipse came in from the West Coast and then went down through the Midwest and then through Nashville, where I was for that eclipse, and then down through the Southeast. This one is cutting up from Texas through the Midwest and then out through New England.
Now, I know we're not supposed to look at the sun. It can really damage the eyes. But why can't people look directly at the eclipse?
Even during an eclipse, if you're anything but totality, if the sun is 75% covered, like in New York City, it'll be roughly 90% covered, 95%, 99%, no matter what, 1% of the sun, 10% of the sun can still seriously damage your eyes. The infrared radiation from the sun literally cooks your eyeball from the inside out, which is generally bad. And so just don't do it. You need to wear safety glasses. You need to wear special solar eclipse glasses. Sunglasses are not going to cut it. If you had 1,000 pairs of sunglasses stacked on top of each other, you might be getting somewhere, but simply don't. If you are on the path of totality and during the few minutes of the total solar eclipse, it is safe to view the moon with the sun's corona surrounding it. That is safe to look at, but that is the only time.
Eclipse glasses, of course, are, you know, hot sellers as we get closer to the event. They're not all safe, though. How can people tell if they have the right ones?
Absolutely. There are many organizations that tell you various tests you can do, things to look for. Go to NASA, like just search NASA eclipse safety. There are plenty of videos, plenty of tutorials online, so you know you're not getting scammed, because this is something you don't want to get scammed about, because you will lose your eyesight. And if your glasses are damaged in any way, just throw them away. It's not worth losing your eyesight.
Why are people so fascinated by an eclipse and so drawn to it? I mean, I know visually it's a spectacle, but it just seems, you know, bigger than that.
It is bigger than that. You know, the way I like to put it is we never think about the sun. It's so regular and so dependable. We know the sun rises in the east every morning and sets in the west every night. It does it, and it has since the dawn of human civilization. It has for billions of years. It's orderly. It's predictable. It's so regular. We don't even pay attention to it. And during an eclipse, that normal ordering is flipped upside down. The day turns to night. The stars come out in the middle of the afternoon. It looks like the sun is going away. And there is a moment, there is a brief moment where we can connect with our ancestors before they knew why the eclipses happened. That you feel a little worried that it might stay this way, that it may not return to normal. There's a very like existential feeling to that, from that upsetting of the normal order. And then you take a few breaths and the moon keeps moving and the sun comes back out.
I have to ask, where are you going to see this one?
I will be in Indianapolis, Indiana at the Indy 500 Motor Speedway.
Wow. Well, enjoy. Your enthusiasm is contagious. Astrophysicist Paul Sutter, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Kudlow on Fox Business is now on the go for podcast fans. Get key interviews with the biggest business newsmakers of the day. The Kudlow podcast will be available on the go after the show every weekday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
I'm Dana Perino. Join me for my podcast, Perino on Politics. Every Monday, I'm going to talk to people I trust in politics as they tell me what they're seeing and thinking in the 2024 election cycle.
When it comes to campaign cash, President Biden is saying, show me the money. But will it help him come November? This week, I'm joined by the president and CEO of Squared Communications, Michael Meehan, for a look at the challenges ahead for the Biden campaign. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
This is Tommy Lahren with your Fox News commentary coming up.
Former President Trump campaigned next to an empty lectern in Green Bay, Wisconsin Tuesday.
You know what that is? That's for Joe Biden. I'm trying to get him to debate. I'm calling on Crooked Joe to debate anytime, any place. We'll do it anywhere you want, Joe.
The Biden campaign's response when Trump wouldn't debate the other Republicans in the race months ago, he said only candidates who are losing want to be up there. No one's really winning or losing at this point. They're virtually tied in national polls. But Wall Street Journal polls this week showed Trump ahead in six of seven so-called battleground states: Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania, with the president ahead by a point in Wisconsin. First Lady Jill Biden says about her husband losing in swing states, no, he's not.
He's coming up, and he's even or doing better.
That was on CBS Mornings on Wednesday. Well, how accurate are the polls showing Trump or President Biden ahead?
Polling has been a challenging industry, to say the least, in recent years with all the changes in technology and how people consume and get their information.
Republican strategist Colin Reed, co-founder of South and Hill Strategies.
But look, I find the president, and I noticed the first lady's willingness to dive into the weeds and litigate the ins and outs of polling discrepancies, it's below the office they hold. Candidates at any level are supposed to present an image of being above the polls, being focused on doing their jobs. And the old trope about good policies equal good politics, it happens to be true. The president out there getting into arguments with reporters about the accuracy of polling, it just diminishes him. He's supposed to be the commander in chief. He's the leader of the free world. He's got a whole host of issues on his plate, internationally and domestic. And for him to be out there challenging the veracity of polls, it's not what a presidential candidate or frankly a president should be spending his time doing.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, former President Trump did the same thing when he was a candidate and then when he was president. But there is, you know, a point to want to, you know, maybe stay above the fray and let your surrogates do that stuff. Now, the Supreme Court of Florida this week may have lit a fire under Democrats, a couple of issues that typically get Democrats to the polls: abortion and marijuana, protecting abortion and legalizing recreational marijuana. Do you think it'll make a difference?
Well, look, the battle lines of this upcoming election are pretty clear. Republicans want to talk about immigration and Democrats want to talk about abortion. And that's not a secret. And it's a winning issue for both sides. And on the issue of abortion, I get it. It's been a challenge for Republicans in the last couple of elections. It's one where there are messaging challenges, to be sure, in terms of what happened, what the Supreme Court did, and what these individual states are doing. So each side has an issue they want to really prosecute the other side on. In terms of Florida, though, Florida has become a really deep red state. And under the leadership of Governor DeSantis and others before him, it used to be the quintessential battleground. We all remember the year 2000 when a handful of votes decided the presidency. Those days are long gone. So for the Democrats to be spending so much time and capital and energy in a state they're frankly not going to win and not going to even compete in, it's a little puzzling. We talked about those battleground states at the beginning here. I mean, those are the states. Those are the stakes where this battle is going to be determined, where the outcome of the election is going to be decided. And it's not a secret. It's not rocket science. There's 5 to 7 states that are going to determine this thing. You saw former President Trump in Michigan this week. So the Democrats' obsession with Florida is a little perplexing because it's 27 electoral votes, or it might be even higher now with realignment, are not going blue anytime soon.
Is there a strategy potentially for either side these days to force your opponent to spend a little time and capital on a state that they're probably going to win anyway? You know what I mean? Like, even if the Biden campaign doesn't really think they're going to win Florida, could they at least try to draw some cash out of the Trump campaign there?
It's not a bad strategy at a macro level, but Florida is just it's not even close. Now, Michigan, on the other hand, where former President Trump was, that's a blue state. That's a state President Biden should win. That's a state where Republicans, frankly, don't really have any business competing. Yet you saw former President Trump there earlier in the week. It's also been a state that has been at the epicenter of a lot of major political issues the last couple of years. Think back to the car strikes last fall, where President Biden marched with the union workers. This entire debate over electric vehicles clearly centers in a state like Michigan, which has been the home of domestic auto manufacturing for so many years. So for sure, you want to drag your opponents out of their comfort zone and make them spend specious time and resources on marginal states. I say marginal in politically speaking, but you don't. Florida is not one that's going to be remotely close in the fall if passed as prologue.
The Biden campaign is also now having to spend maybe a little more effort on trying to win back minority voters, young voters they used to have in their pocket, used to be able to count on. What's behind the numbers there? Is Biden losing those voters? Is Trump winning those voters?
A lot of the realignment happening right now politically is a result of just a general dissatisfaction with how the state of the economy and the country are feeling right now. The Wall Street Journal had a great piece talking about how the economy on numerically is doing great, but voters don't feel it. And in politics, perception is reality. And this is the challenge that is undermining the Biden candidacy's support amongst these key groups. And look, we're in April of an election year. And if we're talking about a Democratic candidate for president, be it Joe Biden or anyone else, struggling to lock up voters who have voted reliably Democrat for years, whether it's Hispanics, whether it's Black voters, you name it, they've got a big problem on their hands. We're at the point in the campaign right now where your base should be locked up. They should be all in. They should be mobilized and they should be fully behind your candidate. And we should be fighting over the middle. Right now, the Biden's got to keep an eye on their left flank while also competing for those folks in the middle. And it's why these numbers are so challenging for him, both nationally and in the battlegrounds.
You're right. The perception of the economy, at least, is poor for the president. What's going on with immigration has been poor for the president. What happened with the pandemic didn't help Donald Trump in 2020. It's funny, the last couple of elections, I wonder if the incumbency has become a hindrance as much as a help.
Yeah, it used to be that these incumbent presidents were really hard to knock off after 4 years. You know, before President Trump, it was President George H.W. Bush, Jimmy Carter, and then you have to go back quite a ways to find someone who didn't get two terms. And there's a reason for that. The power of incumbency, the ability to project a sense of strength and confidence and calm about what's happening. You can fly in and out of all these states and cities on Air Force One, and you have so much of the trappings of office that are used to be a tailwind rather than a headwind. Certainly the pandemic and President Trump's handling of it did not help him in 2020. And it was, frankly, a big reason that President Biden was able to win. And now I think one thing that maybe these polls are starting to pick up, but not yet, is just this really unsettled state of international affairs. It all started in August of 2021 with what happened with the Afghanistan withdrawal under President Biden. And that's when people just started thinking, this guy does not know what he's doing. And it was the images of people as the planes were taking off. And that's where it all really started. And then, of course, you've got what's happening in Ukraine and in Russia. And that war seems to be going on endlessly. Of course, Republicans have different points of view on it, to be sure. And now what's happening in Israel. So there's a lot of discontent from Biden's left flank, frankly, in terms of what's happening internationally. But he's not going to get any points from Republicans either because of how much goodwill, whatever there was eroded and undermined by the fiasco in Afghanistan.
Yeah, he may have won some goodwill, and I think he got to speak crassly about a polling bump during the early days of the fight in Ukraine. And I wonder if voters are getting a little bit tired of that. Biden was praised for his leadership then, and now, of course, the party is completely split on what's happening in Gaza.
That's right. And I think the challenge for the White House is both of these conflicts are seemingly ceaseless. There doesn't really appear to be an end in sight. So it's not as though the waters are all of a sudden going to calm down between now and November. I mean, it's just we're already in the first week of April. We used to talk about these things early on as well. We got plenty of time left in the clock to figure these things out. That it's getting late early in terms of this election, in terms of the how it's all going to be litigated. And that's the biggest challenge for the White House right now.
Vice President Harris campaigning in North Carolina. She's been out and about. Donald Trump doesn't have that person yet. I don't know that it matters as strong as his base is. There's concern, obviously, about both candidates' age, more so with the president. And polls show that a lot of people are not super excited about the idea of a President Kamala Harris. I assume it's too late to dump her, but does it matter necessarily who former President Trump picks?
Well, choosing a vice president is one of the few marquee moments in the campaign where the news cycle stops, all the attention is on you and your candidate, and you get the stage to yourself. So in that sense, it does, because a lot of the drama is gone. The primary race is over. We know who the contestants are going to be. So in terms of that, it's a major news moment. I think President Trump is right when he says that it doesn't really matter who his VP is, because people are attracted to him because of what he projects, who he is and his candidacy. But in terms of Vice President Harris, look, this has not been her first, her time in office has not been kind for her public image. And people are starting to think about the fact that because 86% of voters think President Biden is too old for the job, the next natural thought process is, well, who's going to take over if something unfortunate happens to him? And Vice President Harris has not acquitted herself well. The video of her in Puerto Rico clapping and cheering along to these people who were protesting her very presence, it was literally described by mainstream media outlets as a scene out of Veep. So people are not comfortable with that. And it's an issue for President Biden. But you're right. It's too late to do anything about swapping her out in the ballot. So you go to war with the army you have, not the one you want.
30 weeks and change until Election Day 2024. I'm sure we'll talk with Colin Reed again, Republican strategist. Thanks, Colin.
Thanks, Chris. Have a great day.
And now, some good news with Tanya J. Powers.
A father is continuing his passion project to spread positivity following tragedy in his family. Gary King, who lives in Pinellas County, Florida, has posted nearly 600 happiness signs in the area to honor his son Jason, who took his own life in 2012. It inspired King to launch the Happiness Experiment in 2019, and since then he has placed hundreds of red metal signs around St. Petersburg that read, "Happiness." King, who is almost 80 and suffers from complex post-traumatic stress disorder, says he created the experiment to show others how positive thinking can affect our daily lives. He's put up the happiness signs on telephone poles and city limits signs near intersections, local hospitals, and school entrances. He recently put up the 593rd one at a park where Jason enjoyed playing basketball when he was a child. King has also written a book called The Happiness Experiment, and a documentary on his project is in the works. When he's asked when he'll stop putting up the signs, he says, quote, "never," because they save people's lives. If you or a loved one needs support now, call or text the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988 or chat at 988lifeline.org. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. On September 2nd, 1982, 15-year-old Karen Stitt never made it home from her bus stop in Sunnyvale, California. Her body was found the next morning, raped and stabbed 59 times. This week, I'm joined by Sunnyvale Detective Matt Hutchison as he details the creative investigative journey he took to arrest the suspect 40 years later. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and FoxNewsPodcast.com.
Subscribe to this podcast at FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Tommy Lahren.
What's on your mind?
This next story combines at least three elements of the Democrat plot to destroy America: illegal immigration, squatters' rights, and felon coddling bail reform policies. Venezuelan illegals were caught squatting in the basement of a home in the Bronx after an executed search warrant uncovered loaded guns, extended magazines, ammo, ketamine, cocaine, and a 7-year-old child. One of the illegals has been previously arrested for attempted murder. These thugs were charged with criminal possession of a weapon, criminal possession of a controlled substance, and acting in a manner injurious to a child. But here's the most twisted part. All but two of them were released without bail. You know, it's bad enough when American thugs and felons are coddled, but now Democrat lawmakers are actively shielding criminal illegal aliens from consequences. Even so, what are the chances New Yorkers keep voting Democrat? I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show Tommy Lahren is Fearless at OutKick.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. In these ever-changing times, you can rely on Fox News for hourly updates for the very latest news and information on your time. Listen and download now at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.